All right, this is lecture 31, I guess, and good to be with you again. We're talking, still talking about forces now in Unit 3, not the just, because we just started it. Today is specifically the fetishes and charms, and we keep referring, don't we, to Surahs 113 and 114, and I thought maybe I should read those two short surahs. These are, as we've said before, are used for magical purposes. The first one, 113, is Al-Falaq, the daybreak. Say, I seek refuge in with the Lord of the Dawn from the mischief of created things. See, that sounds very folkish, doesn't it? From the mischief of darkness as it overspreads. From the mischief of those who practice secret arts, and from the mischief of the envious ones as he practices envy. I mean, this is really, when you think about it and listen to it carefully. And then 114, say, I seek refuge with the Lord and cherisher of mankind, the king or ruler of mankind, the god or judge of mankind, from the mischief of the whisperer of evil who withdraws after his whisper, the same who whispers in the hearts, into the hearts of mankind, among jinns and among men. I mean, this is really something. But before we get too hard on the Muslims and Islam folk stuff, let's just back up a little bit and let us remind ourselves about the Jews. The Jews of the dispersion used book, in other words, used the book, the holy book, in other words, the Torah, to lighten childbirth, and the specific reference there was Genesis 21 and verse 1. That's about Sarah having a baby, and I guess if Sarah could have a baby at age 90, it would give the Jews, but notice that it's in the dispersion, so you get the strong impression that they must have picked it up from their neighbors. Divining rod, Genesis 24 and verse 2, that has to do with Abraham when he was finding a wife for his son Isaac, which, you know, it makes sense, doesn't it? After all, this is, you're going out on a limb when you do that. But you're going out on a limb when you get married anyway. So, and then against danger on the road, that one is Genesis 32, 31. And, you know, when Jacob... He sets out on his trip. There's a lot of danger, and so that one. But also the fact, I suppose, that Jacob limps quite a bit of his life. Now, Genesis 49 and verse 18, interesting there, why that would protect against the against a mad dog. I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning is. 49 and verse 18, here it is. It says that I look for your deliverance, O Lord. Well, you certainly would need deliverance from a mad dog. And then I suppose Genesis 17 and verse 16 to help in the case of bleeding would be similarly somewhat difficult to understand, but that's 17 and verse 16, if I can find the verse, and it says that I will bless her and surely give you a son by her. I'm not sure exactly, as I said before, how they choose these verses, because some are more plain than others, but Zwemer, who Samuel Zwemer, who was no fool, said this, quoting and pulling his sources out of the Jewish Encyclopedia, that this is what the Jews did. And so, pointedly and notably, the Muslims, it looks like, have picked up some things from the Jews in this folk stuff. Now, when we're talking about fetishes and charms, of course, we're talking about the Quran. And the fact that Muslims think that their safety, security, well-being, and defensive measures by using the Quran, defense against what? Against defense against harm, bad, or, you know, bad luck, or things that could go wrong. We've mentioned this before, too, that the Quran admits or acknowledges that it is a kind of deception. But nevertheless, it seems to contradict itself, and it says that, you know, this can, these kind of things can sow discord between a man and his wife. So it does acknowledge the evil of it, but yet acknowledges, or at least says that it can sow discord. That's one of the things. Now, there are various things mentioned here in the PowerPoint and on the class notes, but one of them that Muslims do is they swear on the Quran. Now, this is not necessarily magic, is it? Because people have been doing that with the holy books for years. I think the first time it happened with the Quran for a U.S. senator was a few years ago when I think maybe was his name Senator Ellison. Swore on the Quran, which surprised Americans, since they've always been swearing in the Bible. Now, but this is seen quite clearly through how the Quran is handled. And if you drop the Quran, if you if you have any accidents with it, then you're in, you know, in serious trouble. So if you, by any chance, any misfortune of dropping the Quran in the presence of Muslims, then you apologize profusely and hope that it will all end well. It hasn't. It doesn't always. I don't know whether I told this story or not, but I certainly have told it in class of incidents I know of where people dropped the Quran. For instance, a very wealthy, influential woman in Pakistan that I knew of. Didn't know her personally, but read about it in the papers, that she somehow dropped a Quran out of her purse into a ditch. And I'm telling you, had she not been wealthy and influential, she could well have suffered harm from the local people. But another person whom I heard about was having his devotions just like we do in the morning by a little fire. He would make some tea, and then he would read his Quran. And one day, one morning, inadvertently, the Quran fell into the fire. Now, whether he had gone and left or something done, something else, but he came back and the Quran was on fire. So he panicked and he shouts out, I suppose, which was the thing to do to show your how much you dread this. And he said, the Quran is on fire, the Quran is on fire. And a woman, just a neighborly woman, not a neighborly woman, but some neighbor woman who didn't like him, shouted out and said, this man has burned the Quran. And so people gathered and they were beating him up. Now, the police came and rescued him, as they often do, rescue you by putting you in jail. But it didn't help, because by that time the people were so angry that they assembled, broke down the jail, took that old fellow, and he wasn't young, but he was someone who read the Quran and probably had even memorized it, tied him up tied him onto a motorcycle, drug him around town and killed him, because they had accused him. They accused him of misusing the Quran. Well, these are sad stories, but they do show you this how the Quran is, I guess, worshipped, really. It's now Muslims too would use the Quran to, in other words, write verses in minibuses or on other buses, ordinary buses. Their calligraphy pages of the Quran, in other words, water poured over pages of the Quran and then drunk to protect from the witch, and on and on and on. These are the kind of things that are done. Now, Memorizing holy books, of course, is considered to be a good thing. And we memorize the Bible too, but I keep thinking that the emphasis on memorizing the Quran in Islam is not all good, because it seems to me that they're memorizing it in order, oftentimes to for magical purposes. In Egypt, for example, it says that Satan, Shaitan, never enters the house where the Quran is recited daily. So the Quran is used oftentimes for personal benefit, and those two surahs that we've just read, the last two in the Quran, put under a pillow are supposed to make for an easy delivery. In North Africa, boys drink holy water that has been washed off their slates so that they can, be good at memorizing the Quran. In Iran, the Quran is laid in your lap in New Year for good luck. How's that? And then on not so pleasant a topic is the matter of harming others. In other words, what magic, how is the Quran used to do magic or harm against others magically? Well, you can do it through various verses. One of them is 3 in verse 127. That's chapter 3, Surah 3, 127. And the verse is that he might cut off part of those who disbelieve a base so that they should return in failure. Now, that's the verse that they would use. Now, for someone's death, wow, now that's pretty wicked stuff, isn't it? To want someone's death, the verse there, or verses, would be possibly 5 and verse 30 through 33. And if that is repeated 29 times, and if it is written on the face of a plaster, in other words, a plaster masks, not this isn't necessarily what we're talking about, but the best we can do, and if those verses that I've given you are written on that mask plus 29 times, those they are repeated. The victim's name is repeated on the back. Then a dragger is plunged into it, something like that. Then that's how it's possible that someone would want your death. Now, I admit that wasn't always clear how they do it, but nevertheless, that's not the point. The fact is that they do. Specific verses, passages for specific situations. Well, one of the things, of course, is marriage. And you would want to write on an unmarried woman's garment, whoever recommends this does it for a good cause. The verse there, it's a little bit off to the side, but it's 4, 85 through 87, and just giving you the briefest part of that verse. But if that could be written on the woman that is wanted in marriage, on the garment that she wears, then possibly you can, I'm sorry, I went too far. Then you can gain her hand in marriage. You know, it's hard to find a wife. It is really hard to find a wife in many cultures. And so what do? Well, you do all kinds of things, and you, of course, work through your family, and many times it's a negotiating. But you might have to, talking now as a Muslim, might want to resort to other methods as well, which magical. And then reconciliation, reconciliation is a good thing, isn't it? Whatever good you send forth for your souls is the verse there, 2 and 110. So the name is on an earthen vessel, and there I went too far again, the name is on an earthen vessel with a reed pen, the one you want reconciliation with, dipped in honey, and then thrown into the well of the offended person or party. So then the person offended drinks it. Hopefully then there will be reconciliation. Of course, in our scriptures, for reconciliation, we don't depend on magic. But if we follow the scriptures, Matthew 18 says, if you have anything against someone, then go to him in private, talk to him, Matthew 18. If that doesn't work, take somebody else with you. If that doesn't work, then take it to the church. So do all you can for reconciliation. Reconciliation is a good thing, but here we're talking about using magical purposes. Now, another method is protection that is used, not for reconciliation, we're now under protection, to use the first letters of certain suttas. Now, there are 29 chapters or 29 suttas in the Quran that start with Aleph, Lam, Mim. We don't know. No one really knows what this means, but you can use that, since it is a bit magical anyway. Possibly those things, those three words, are going to protect you. Now, another one is Surah 36, and the name of that surah is Yasin. Nobody is sure what that means either, and that makes it all the more, I guess, mystical. But Muslims have said, well, it must be about Muhammad. It must be Ya Insan, O humankind. It must be about Muhammad and about his revelation. So take that, Yasin, and write it on a white muslin shirt. Now, what is a muslin? Muslin, M-U-S-L-I-N, muslin shirt. As far as I can say, a muslin shirt is one that has not been dyed, just simple, stuff. Write that stuff on the white muslin shirt, rough material and inexpensive, and then there will be protection, supposedly. Now, here you have the troops, and oftentimes when Muslims are in battle, they wear on their headbands some kind of a message that they hope will protect them. For instance, of course, Muhammad, there is often other name. Well, here it's Allahu Akbar, God is great. Allahu Akbar is a very common one. But others you would see, like, you can Google it and find it. Hussein, who is one of the martyrs, of course, if you're Shiites. You see the name Ali as well. So those are the kind of headbands that Muslims would sometimes wear, and hoping that they can be protected. In other words, it's a good luck charm, isn't it? Now, in the war with Muslims, Muslim against Muslim, in 1980 through 1988, Iran versus Iraq, these were both Shiite majority countries, Iran with a mass smashing majority, and Iraq with just over a 50% majority. They were both fighting a holy war. I can't figure out how that worked, but during that war, Ayatollah imported 50,000 keys from Taiwan, sort of, magical keys. It didn't help much. But this is the kind of things that Muslims do. Now, here is, I'm sorry, I went too far here, but here are, the fact that that people get killed, scores killed in attack on Shiite pilgrims in Iraq. New York Times, too, that would be, I guess, February the 2nd, 2010. And one fellow was wearing a white shroud for protection. Obviously, it didn't protect him.